Welcome to a Thursday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, do the Heat need a backup point guard, and does Spo need to tweak the offense?
And is it time to start Bam Adebayo as Hassan Whiteside falls back into bad habits? Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here, as always, with David Rommel. We've got a great show for you today. It's a bonus mailbag because, let's face it, this Heat team is creating more questions than answers right now. As always, thanks to everyone who submitted questions, either via Twitter at Locked On Heat or using the hashtag AskLHeat, or by sending them to LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. But let's get to our first question from Remy, who writes in, why can't the Heat look for a backup point guard since Goran Dragic has been out for a while? I think that position is very important since we always blow it in the second half. David, obviously we talked about Goran Dragic a little bit in depth in our recap of that Magic game from the other night.
Yeah.
Do you think it's time that the Heat look for that backup point guard?
I think it's fair. I think there's an ideal candidate already, one that you and I have discussed a number of times, a guy familiar with Eric Spoelstra's offense, familiar with Miami in general, somebody who could complement the players on this team very well, who has veteran experience and is capable as a ball handler.
Is it yoked to Mike Bibby?
No, it is not. It is actually Mario Chalmers. But I think Chalmers is a great, if he's in shape, and we assume that he is because he's getting into shape, and he's posted things down along the lines that he's ready to get back into the NBA. He's actively pursuing a spot.
But he tweeted he was 100% healthy.
Yeah, apparently the Heat social media team isn't following up on that Chalmers lead, although it's being put out there on a silver platter. But as far as the importance is concerned, yes, we've talked about this after the most recent loss to the Magic. The ball handling situation has become somewhat dire without Dragic in the lineup because you're asking Rodney Magruder to handle the ball a lot more than he's capable of and comfortable with, to be honest with you. Not only that, but it's also taxing Josh Richardson, who's being asked to be the team's primary defender in addition to being the team's primary scorer, ball handler, etc. And that's just more than he's capable of. So it's something that Miami needs to explore. I know their motto, and something that we're starting to see more and more, next man up, that kind of mentality of everybody has to find a way, digging in and finding something internally to turn this season around. But that's not going to cut it. I mean, logistically, they need a ball handler that's capable of initiating offense for themselves or others, and they don't have that on the roster. Maybe Tyler Johnson's return helps to some degree, but he's a little turnover prone as well, so I'm not quite sure that he's the answer. I would rather have a more proven guard, and I think Mario fits the bill. I'm not sure who else is available, so it's difficult. You could conceivably trade a future second-round pick for a guard out there. I'm not quite sure off the top of my head if there are any teams looking to move a two-guard here and there. But I'm sure there are options to explore. What do you think about the situation?
I think that Justice Winslow has filled in nicely at point guard. And actually going into that Magic game, in that previous six games going into that night, Winslow had a positive plus-minus. And that just shows, like, regardless, and they had two wins going into that game, but the other games were losses mostly. And so it shows that he's starting to, like, the team plays better when he's on the floor, and I think part of that is due that he's coming off the bench and going up against other benches a lot. But he also gets, involved with the starting unit. Spo's rotations work where Winslow comes in, a bunch of reserves come in, and then eventually the starters come in around Winslow. But he can't be the only guy, especially when Goran Dragic is out. So you almost need another backup there. My only issue is, who do you play that guy over? Because you can't play him over Dwayne Wade. You just can't. So Do you play him over Tyler Johnson? I don't think Tyler Johnson is a ball handler. We haven't seen that from him in his career, that he's very inconsistent.
He's been asked to do it, but even when he was first on the team alongside Dwayne Wade, it was Wade who handled more of the quote-unquote point guard duties, and Tyler was playing off-ball.
Exactly, and he's better suited for that off-ball position. He's a good off-ball mover. Like, he gets open, he gets shots. It's just a matter of whether or not he makes the shot, but he does a good job of getting open. I don't know where he plays, Tyler Johnson, it shouldn't matter, but he's making $19 million this year and he's already coming off the bench. Can you really afford to not play him at all? You can't play this guy over Wayne Ellington. Wayne Ellington's spacing is just too important. So I just, even if you were to sign Mario Chalmers, like, where does he get the minutes? I don't see where it comes in. Even with Dragic out, you know, whether that's not even including when Dragic comes back and when Deion Waiters eventually comes back.
I've got an alternative.
Go ahead.
I mean, rather than signing a guard, because you're right, there's already a glut in the backcourt and nobody who's really capable of taking a leap as far as creating offense for others. Why not change it around? Like, the idea of starting Wayne Ellington has been, to me anyway, disastrous. Like, it just hasn't worked. Lineups with Wayne don't seem to function very well at the start of games. So I'm not quite sure what his purpose is as a starter. Why not start Justice Winslow as your primary ball handler right away and then have the bench with Rodney McGruder? Send Rodney to the bench, have him come off with Wayne Ellington and Dwayne Wade. That seems to be a good guard unit, I think, a rotation there that would create offense for others that could take advantage of those second units and still find a way to function. Can you imagine Rodney McGruder picking rolls with Bam Adebayo? I think that would be even more dangerous than the Whiteside combination.
It's an idea, but then you kind of run into that same issue where when Winslow's off the floor and Dragic is hurt, what do? Right? You'd still, I think maybe you try to flip one of these guys for a point guard. Like, you take one of these depth guys. Now, you can't really trade Tyler Johnson for a $19 million point guard.
Yeah. That's not going to happen.
I don't think, I mean, maybe the Rockets would flip Brandon Knight, who's recently been playing. Yeah. Do they want to move Brandon Knight for Tyler Johnson? Tyler Johnson is probably more reliable than Brandon Knight at this point. Brandon Knight is probably a better point guard at this point, and you wouldn't need as much from him, and you wouldn't be required to play him as much. Or do you maybe move a James Johnson type guy for a Brandon Knight? Like, do you try to move one of these kind of extra pieces, these redundancies on the roster, to get that backup point guard? Now all of a sudden you kind of reduce how many guys need to play, and now all of a sudden minutes open up for that new backup point guard. I think that would really be the solution here, you know?
I've seen some people float the idea of a Chinese all-star, Jimmer Fredette. Mm. I don't think he's a point guard in the league, to be honest with you. I don't think he's not. He's a more of an off-ball catch-and-shoot kind of guy, and that's fine. He might be able to create his opportunities in the Chinese basketball league, but that's a whole completely different system of play with much inferior players, so I don't think he's going to work for the Heat or any NBA team at this point.
It just feels like the Heat are sort of stuck with this roster, and that kind of gets to the bigger point where, you know, the Heat, this is not a roster that makes any sense. Like, this is just a poorly constructed roster, and there's really no getting around that, right? This is a team that basically has a ton of power forwards and centers, and then a bunch of two guards, one point guard, and no real small forwards. Like, it's just a weirdly constructed group, and you'd think that they would try to make a move here and there to make it make a little bit more sense, but obviously that's been easier said than done because we've heard that they've put guys like Tyler Johnson and Hassan Whiteside on the market. Now, we don't know what they were asking for, what the asking price for those guys were, but we know that they at least were shopping them. But it feels like there has to be a move out there at some point where they can, you know, again, move one of these big guys, move one of these two guards to get a player who makes more sense, to get a guy with length on the perimeter, or get a point guard who can handle the ball when Dragic isn't in there. I mentioned Deion Waiters briefly. I don't even know where he fits in when he returns. You know, you and I have theorized he might not play at all this year. He might just take a leap year this season because where does he play? I don't see where he plays. The other thing here, and we haven't mentioned it, is Dwayne Wade. It just feels like he's kind of like the guy that could do that. Like, and I've floated the idea of starting Dwayne Wade while Dragic is out. I don't know if you want to do that and kind of throw Wade off of his rhythm for this one last dance that he's having, but maybe we take your idea and my idea and kind of merge them where you have Justice Winslow starting as the point guard and then Dwayne Wade coming off the bench behind Winslow as a second unit point guard. I mean, maybe something like that could work because between Wade, Winslow, and Dragic, those are three guys that can lead the offense.
So, okay, let's flesh that out a little bit. Who would the starting lineup be then? Justice?
It would probably be Justice. I think you'd have to play Ellington next to him anyway for the spacing.
Okay.
So maybe like Justice, Ellington.
Richardson, James Johnson, and Whiteside.
I hate playing James Johnson and Winslow together. I'd almost say Kelly Olynyk and Whiteside at that point. I mean, James Johnson and Whiteside, I suppose, could work next to Winslow. It would be something like that, yeah.
And then your backup would be McGruder, Wade, Tyler, theoretically getting some minutes, and then Olynyk and Adebayo.
Yeah, that's it would probably look something like that.
It sounds like it would work.
Because you'd also have Rodney guarding the best opposing guard.
Yeah, whoever staggered probably from the starting lineup or whoever, you know, even against, you know, ideally, when you get a six-man, look what happened, you know, against the Orlando Magic, where Terrence Ross came in there and lit the Heat up in the third quarter. I mean, Rodney was on the bench for most of that. He could have gone in there fresh and kind of just locked down and not necessarily try to be the playmaker he's being asked to do so as the starting guard. You know, that's something that would fall on Dwayne Wade's more than capable shoulders. So I think it would work out for a lot of the players that, you know, are kind of being forced to take on positions that they're not quite comfortable with.
While we're talking about offensive tweaks, we've got another question about just that and what maybe the Heat should look at the time machine to improve this group. But we'll get to that after this break. We've got a few questions about Bam Adebayo, but first, this question from Billy. Dragic and Wade missing games has hurt Miami's offense. How can Miami revamp it? The current offense looks like it hasn't evolved much since last season. I feel we need to implement more of that 7-11 drive and kick. Kind of a hybrid of the offenses over the last two seasons. Wade, Richardson, and Goran should all be able to drive that offense as well as Dragic and Waiters did. Plus, with James Johnson back and a semi-more aggressive Justice Winslow, I feel it could at least make the games more competitive. David, I pulled up some numbers here because I was thinking about this a few days ago and about that drive and kick offense. Kind of wondering the same thing as Billy is proposing here. Like, should Miami just go back to that more simplified offense with two lead ball handlers facilitating for everybody else? In that 2016-17 season when they went 30-11, during that stretch, the Heat had an offensive rating of 112.1.
Wow.
Which is near the top in the league and would rank actually in the top six this season, even two seasons removed from that when offense and scoring is ramped up this year. That would still be a top six offense this year. So borderline elite. Last year, they went from that 30-11 offensive rating of 112.1 to last season dipping to 106.1. And then now this season, they're at a low of 105.2 points per 100 possessions. That's really bad. Where everybody else, or the entire league as a whole, is kind of ramping up scoring, and Miami has dropped 7 points per 100 possessions in two seasons. Now, granted,
Luke Babbitt is an MVP candidate.
He didn't help last season, apparently. Yeah. But look, so you would say, okay, yeah, go back to that 30-11 offense. But here's the problem. Miami is basically doing that. The Heat are number one in the league in drives per game at 52.8 drives per game. And that's kind of far and away the number. They're a whole drive over the second place Brooklyn Nets, which is a pretty big margin when you look at those stats. And they're fourth in the NBA in catch-and-shoot three-point attempts per game with almost 26 a game. So the numbers back it up that it's a drive-and-kick offense. Now, it's not the same drive-and-kick offense as that 30-11 group where, like I said, you had Dion and Dragic basically running the show there, but one of them would drive and kick to Babbitt and Magruder, you know, after a high pick-and-roll with Hassan Whiteside. Now it's more – that was sort of, you know, Whiteside sets a screen – drive, kick, three-point shot. Now it's a little bit more when you have guys like Winslow and Rodney Magruder who are able to do a little bit of creation on their own. It's sort of like drive, kick, swing, and event, and you just kind of rinse, repeat until you find an open three-point attempt.
So I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. I'm not sure if that's something you can figure out, but I'm curious during that 30-11 stretch what the team's field goal percentage was at shots at the rim, because I think that's a big part of it. It's not, you have to have the catch and shoot capabilities, and Miami is still shooting perimeter shots at a pretty decent level. It's not like it's been abysmal or anything like that. And they're taking a number of attempts, or they're knocking those down at a fairly decent rate as far as catch and shoot opportunities are concerned. But if they're driving as much as they are, what is their field goal percentage at the rim this year? I know it's probably pretty bad. And what was it during that 30-11 stretch, if that's something we can figure out? Because I think that's where the bigger difference might actually lie.
I think you're exactly right. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me here, but it's absolutely – I mean, the Heat are getting good shots this year.
Yeah.
They're getting good shots. They're just not – and they're falling from three-point range for the most part. They're not converting at the rim. They are the worst team in the league right now at – shooting at the rim, or at least the last time I checked, which was a couple of days ago. They're the worst team in the league at converting at the rim. And you just, so what they're doing is they're basically just missing a bunch of easy shots. If you start making those easy shots, or at least you go from, you know, making less than half to going to a normal range, I think all of a sudden Miami's offense just turns around. I think it's really that simple. If you just start converting at the rim, Miami now goes from one of the worst offenses in the league, which they are, they're a bottom five offense, to probably above average, I would say top 15, pretty easily, by just making that small change.
In Goron's absence, who's been the Heat's best finisher at the rim? Because I feel like Richardson is taking a lot of shots at the rim, but they're usually kind of like fadeaways or in traffic looking for foul calls that he's not getting. Winslow's had his you know, obviously throughout his career, he's had problems finishing at the rim. Johnson has been in and out of the lineup, and you know, he's still rounding into shape, and he's missing shots at the rim. Whiteside, well, you know what his troubles are. So, like, honestly, with the exception of Bam Adebayo, does anybody perform at an above average level at the rim?
Bam. I mean, yeah,
that's what I said.
That's it.
So that's a problem right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've got. You feel like Richardson has been good on the balance of the year, but yeah, the last few games it feels like he's missing a bunch. But yeah, I don't think that. I think that Spo is running the right offenses. That's kind of what I'm getting at. We've had so many questions about Spo's offense. They're getting good shots. They're getting good shots. They're just not falling. And I think, again, it comes down to this team is just not a very athletic team. There's not a lot of guys outside of Bam who play above the rim. There's not a lot of guys who just are able to bulldoze their way and get easy shots. I mean, there's no Giannis here who just kind of like stretch arms his way to a basket. Like, there's just nobody on this roster who is a super athlete outside of Bam. And we're going to talk about Bam, actually, and whether or not he should be getting more. Let's just do that now. This next question comes from Kyle. He asks two questions. He's cheating, but that's fine. Number one, so Whiteside left early in that Magic game, and Bam is closing. How close are we to Bam starting now? Let's just answer this first one before we get to the second one, because the second one's basically unrelated.
He can't. He's not going to start. I mean, at the beginning of the season, one of the things that we were wondering about the most was how do we get minutes for Bam Adebayo, who we'd heard during the offseason, and I heard from a number of players at Media Day how he had improved over the summer. He's shown flashes that no other player on the roster had expected, etc. It doesn't change anything. You know, Whiteside's on the roster, Olynyk's on the roster. These guys make much more money. And as much as we think development is the key for the Heat's future, I guess Eric Spoelstra or the front office thinks otherwise, that they need to continue to roll Whiteside out there. Unless he gets benched, is going to which creates a huge schism in the team. He's not getting traded, so we can forget that idea right away. The reality is he's probably going to continue to get most of the minutes as the team starts.
Look, I think that right now Spo has found sort of this middle ground of yanking Whiteside after the first 6 or 7 minutes and then basically playing Bam in the fourth quarter and not Whiteside. And that's been sort of... I think
it's a compromise, and it's a dangerous one, because I think if you ask players, and we've talked to players before, and they all say they want to start, et cetera, but they also put a real premium on being the closer, on being that finishing unit. So the fact that Spoelstra's gone with Adebayo speaks volumes.
Exactly. And now I'm at the point where what does it matter if you bench Whiteside? Like, what are you risking at this point? Because he's already an attitude issue. That's not changing starter or reserve. He's already just like you already walk on eggshells around him. What's the difference?
And I know that he's getting... that coaching staff can't tell Whiteside. He's like, look, if you come off the bench in that Adebayo role, you're going to dominate over backup centers, small fives or slower fives that aren't starting in the league for a reason. And he could put up his big numbers and he'd probably be happy that way. I can't see why anybody hasn't tried to convince him of that.
Bam Adebayo is the better player. Justice Winslow is one of Miami's best players at this point. He is. And Josh Richardson's obviously starting and playing 30 minutes a game, so he's not an issue. But those three guys should all be in the starting lineup. Like, that for is sure. The future of this Heat team. And look, and they're the present, so they should be playing. And then look, this is a group of average starters, right? Maybe slightly above average, but I would say, let's just say average. But if you put them on that, if you turn an average starting group into a second unit, that becomes a very good bench unit. Yeah. Like, it just makes a lot of sense to me. I'm at the point where it doesn't make sense why Bam isn't starting. It's time to just take Whiteside, say, look, you're sitting on the bench and we don't care anymore. Dwayne Wade didn't come off the bench. You can come off the bench. Yeah, get over
good
yourself.
Point. Yeah, exactly.
Like, he's the greatest player in franchise history. You're not top 30, dog.
Alonzo Mourning, the second greatest player, came off the bench.
Yes, and won a championship.
In history. Udonis Haslam doesn't even play. Guess what, Hassan? You're not bigger than the team or anybody currently on the roster. Get over it.
Exactly. And it's time that happens. Second question from Kyle. Does the news about Markelle Fultz's diagnosis change your opinions on trading for him? If this fixes his shot, Miami could get another young talent to add to the current three. Those three obviously being Bam, Richardson, and Winslow. David, I'm out on Fultz. I don't see the reason for it. It's another headache. It's another thing you got to worry about. And right now, this team just has too much stuff to deal with.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if you're at a bottoming out level where this team is not necessarily actively tanking, but realizing that they're no more than a 20 or 25 win team, then maybe you can take a chance, kind of stash Fultz and hope that he'll turn it around. But that's a big hope. He could just very well be a bust. And we've heard problems with him that might be psychological since before the draft a couple seasons ago. He's had his issues with the front office and the coaching staff. He's had issues off the court. If he's really got something going on that's affecting his shoulder and creating a shoulder injury, and we believe that that's the case now as per the most recent diagnosis, that could take a long time, if ever, to repair. He may never be the kind of player that we expect him to be out of the University of Washington. And to be honest with you, he's somebody else's issue right now. Honestly, I think for him, the best thing would probably be to go overseas, build himself back up, kind of develop that confidence, and then maybe come back as a more complete player, a more comfortable and confident player. The pressure...
I disagree with that.
Okay. Well, I mean...
Yeah, I'm worried about... You kind of want him around, like, the sort of the best doctors, and the number one sports medicine is here.
That's really helped over the past year and a half.
That's true. That's a good point. He just needs to go somewhere with less pressure, and I think there's several NBA teams where he could do that. But it's not Miami. I mean, this fan base has zero patience right now. Like, Fultz is the furthest thing that this fan base needs. And if we just – outside of the whole mental issues and the shoulder thing and whether or not he can play or not, he doesn't make much sense for this cap situation either. I mean, the trade I keep hearing right now is Wayne Ellington for Markelle Fultz, who says no. I think the Heat say no. You're not getting a player who can help you right now, and you're not getting any cap relief. Wayne Ellington is your only expiring contract. You can get a lot more – from Wayne Ellington than a broken Markelle Fultz. And not to mention, Fultz has you think he's cheap because he's a rookie? He's on the books for $9.7 million next year. That's another $10 million contract to add to the Heat's books where Ellington is otherwise an expiring deal. It doesn't make any sense. You don't want to add $10 million more to a team that's already capped out. So it doesn't make any sense for me. If you make a move for Fultz, you've got to trade another long-term contract that goes beyond that 19-20 season. Right. Then all of a sudden, all right, let's talk about it. If you want James Johnson for Markelle Fultz, I think the Heat should entertain that. But even then, I would try to maybe get a third team involved to take Fultz that makes more sense for that guy and try to just get some sort of other asset back, some minor asset, or just a contract that expires a little bit sooner than that James Johnson or one of those other 4-year deal contracts. But it just doesn't make any sense for Miami at this point.
I'm seeing a lot of Phoenix to Philadelphia things. I mean, they could potentially move Trevor Ariza for Markelle Fultz or something along those lines. The Sixers could definitely use some wing help. And Fultz could go to a team where he could play off of Devin Booker. He's not going to be that team star. He has less pressure. They're not going to win anytime soon.
Let him go be a defensive stopper. He can do that. If Devin Booker can shoot all of the shots, he already does. And just let Fultz just use that long wingspan to just stop guys. Like, he's good at that. He's a good defensive player. He just can't shoot. We'll wrap up the mailbag with a question about Pat Riley's future after this break. All right, David, we've got two more mailbag questions. This first one comes from Mo, who writes in, Bam and James Johnson, they're the same size.
They're not.
I am the only one yelling this, but Bam's development needs to be more of Aaron Gordon. I repeat, he is not a center. Let's focus on that last part. Maybe you have a bone to pick with the Aaron Gordon thing, and I'm sure you do.
No, I mean, Bam and JJ are not the same size. I mean, I've stood next to both of them. They're not. Adebayo's much taller, and I think he's much more equipped for today's league as far as the center position is concerned. I don't know. Comparing him to Aaron Gordon is one thing, but I think Gordon is probably a more complete offensive player than Adebayo is at this point. I think Adebayo is a little bit more stocky than Gordon is.
Gordon's a better ball handler.
Gordon is, yeah, exactly. I think he's a more complete offensive player than Bam Adebayo is.
I tossed this comparison at you yesterday during that right before the Magic game or during the Magic game. I was texting you and I said, more athletic Paul Millsap? He kind of strikes me as that, where you know, he's there's some potential there for him to be a perimeter shooter. I do believe that. And Paul Millsap was not that when he came into the league. But moreover, can play sort of both the four and five, depending on who you play him with. I mean, Paul Millsap played a lot of those Atlanta years next to Al Horford, who was able to space the floor and was more of a finesse center. Which, you know, Bam Adebayo and Kelly Olynyk, that's been a really good pairing for the Heat. It's kind of, I think, baby Paul Millsap, Al Horford for the Heat in that second unit right now. And I think it works. And I don't even care if he's a power forward or a center. In today's game, it's more about the front court pairing and how they play off of each other and complement each other, more so than just naming the positions, right? Jaren Jackson Jr. from Memphis was thought of as a center. Well, when you play next to Marc Gasol, who's also sort of, I won't call him a finesse player, but he's a very skillful center. You can sort of play a Jaren Jackson, who's also very skilled in his own right, next to him, because you're not really limiting what you can do in that offense. Now, and that's why Bam can't play next to Whiteside. Whiteside's too limited. He's not a skilled player like Bam or Kelly Olynyk is. And so I think you could play those two together. And I like Bam's potential as a Paul Millsap type, especially on the defensive end. Paul Millsap, for a lot of years, was in the top five and top three, I even believe, in defensive player of the year voting. I think Bam has that potential. I think he could be really, really good on the defensive end.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I kind of liked another. I'm trying to think of other comparisons there that might help our audience. I kind of like one I think we heard around draft time, which is Sean Kemp. But I think Kemp wasn't a great ball handler. He was just so explosive off the dribble and he could leap over a number of players. And we've seen on a number of occasions that Adebayo has that kind of athletic explosion to him. I think he's a little limited, with his facing the basket game. So if I were him, I would incorporate. His next step as far as the development is concerned is all ball handling and long range shooting. Like, he needs to have those because he's a capable ball handler as far as bringing the ball up, but I don't know if his face-to-basket game is equipped at this point to initiate offense for himself. He's just creating offense basically off putbacks. You know, he's not doing much else to do so, and I think he has the potential. He has the footwork defensively we've seen from him for sure, but offensively I think, with his back to the basket, he can create offense. I think there's, potential as a passer there. We've seen some, that kind of skill from him. He's very versatile, just not excelling in any one aspect offensively, and that kind of makes him limited and changes how you can play him. So, because you have so many different fours around the league that are so much more skilled, that's why he's probably better at a center, or at least playing off a guy like Olynyk, where they're interchangeable at the 4-5.
Exactly, based on the matchup, right? And
the Ringer
compared Bam, I just looked this up, to Montrezl Harrell and Bismack Biyombo. Best case scenario, I think he's. God. I think those are bad comparisons.
Montrez isn't bad. I mean, he's.
It's not. You're right. That's a fine one. I think he's got. I think Bam's a little bit more versatile offensively than Montrez, but I think that's a fair one.
Yeah. I mean, he's flourishing. I mean, you wrote about the Clippers in a great piece. Yeah, he's not bad.
Yeah. Last question comes from Claudia. She writes in, everyone talks about Pat Riley and what he's going to do next season and the season after that. I'm wondering, when will he throw his hands up in the air and leave? He can't leave us like this, can he?
Well, I'll go back to the last week of the preseason in 2003, where after a preseason practice, Pat Riley walked into the locker room and basically just said, I'm done. And he stepped out from the coaching ranks and moved to a full-time position up into the front office, and then came back down a few years later when they had Shaquille O'Neal and others. So I think he's more than capable of stepping away. I think he's older. I think he realizes that, the league has changed and maybe he's not necessarily ready to handle those changes. I think he's mentioned this a number of times that he wants to leave the organization in good hands. I don't know that he's going to be able to oversee that transition into where the team's going to be successful because Riley's too egomaniacal, egotistical, whatever word you want to use. He wants to take the credit for the team's success one way or the other. So think about it from that perspective. If he's gonna leave now, he would get blamed for it. If the team becomes successful, he would want to stay and get that kind of credit. So it's a weird place for him to be. But I'd say he's more likely to leave now when things are bad than rather oversee a turnaround and then step away at that point. I know he said that he wants to leave when things are in a much better place than they currently are. But I don't think that's realistic either.
It kind of strikes, like, if he were to make one move and be like, there, Like, here you go. I'm walking out. Like, one
he could have walked away after the Jimmy Butler trade.
That's exactly where I was going with that. Okay. He could have traded for Jimmy Butler and be like, I got you, your superstar.
I'm out.
Get off my back. I'm out of here. But he made the right call in not trade. Like, I keep saying this. Like, you trade for Jimmy Butler, you're still capped out. Like, you can't surround Jimmy Butler with the sort of talent that Butler right now has in Philadelphia. You wouldn't be able to do it. Especially if you trade most of your assets to get Butler. Like, there's no other assets to move around to improve this team. So he made the right call in the end. Butler was just not the right superstar to trade for. Now, I don't know who the right one is and what the right circumstance might be, but Butler certainly wasn't it. And I do wonder if it's like more – is that more of an incentive to tank? Is it more of an incentive to just say, look, let's tank this year. Let's hope that we get, you know, the second coming of Dwayne Wade in this draft, and at least I can leave you with that? Because otherwise, you're looking at you're looking 3 years out for a real rebuild of this team, and I don't know if Pat Riley's going to stick around for that. I mean, maybe he will. He's like, his longevity has already surprised all of us anyway, so maybe he does stick it out. I don't know, but I'm with you. I do think he wants to get them. Like, yeah, maybe he does step back in a Jerry West role type thing, where he's not the czar of everything, but a consultant type guy.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But Riley's 73. Yeah. I look. I think I've said this before, and if not, it's just something I've been thinking about, but I think the Bam Adebayo re-signing might be potentially the biggest blemish in his career with the Heat, and that's saying a lot because I think he just completely misjudged the market and the demand.
The Bam Adebayo.
I'm sorry, did I say Adebayo?
Yeah.
I meant Hassan Whiteside. My bad.
That makes way more sense. Bam Adebayo was a great pick.
Yes, sorry. Yeah, that was...
And I'm one sure pick away from it. Donovan Mitchell.
I think the Whiteside re-signing was probably the biggest problem and the biggest blemish in his career. And I think he wouldn't want to leave that behind as what Heat fans remember him for. I know they probably will not after bringing a title and that what he accomplished in 2010, et cetera. So if I were my guess, and I guess that's what Claudia's asking for, I think he'll stick around and at least make sure things are moving in a better direction, if not a complete turnaround from where they are.
I agree 100%. Something will change. He'll take credit for that change. And he's put a really good team around him. And we got Shane Battier in that front office right now, who's turned down other front office positions. And so you assume he's got a future in this thing. You've obviously got Andy Ellisberg and
Nick Arison.
You've got a really – and Eric Spoelstra, who I think will only – his voice will only get louder when eventually Pat Riley decides to step away. So you've got – It doesn't – Pat Riley could go away, and I don't think it would dramatically impact what the Heat are able to do. I just do think that eventually, when he does do that decision, I agree with you, there will be something in place where you could say, all right, we're going in the right direction right now, because right now the Heat aren't, and they need to get there. All right, well, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever you use to listen to podcasts, and we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.